Okay, so today we're going to talk about, I don't know, Rob, we're 16 books in or 16 podcasts in, and this book is called The Machete Season, The Killers in Rwanda Speak. Do you want to start out with, I like the idea of if you could only tell somebody one thing that you learned by listening to the podcast, what would that one thing be?
The thing that sticks out to me the most and something that I've been kind of thinking about as you know, we've had a few days to marinate on this, is how this all came about over the radio and how it was more of a comedian sort of point of view towards the situation that eventually became, you know, the exact opposite of comedy. It became a tragedy. So they were doing basically sketch comedy over the radio, and even the oppressed, or I guess, do you even call it oppressed, or at this point, even
the victims.
Victims. Yeah, that's a perfect word for it. Like, the Tutsi were even laughing at some of these jokes, like not foreseeing what was actually possible that was coming up. So, like, you know, it's the Hutu and the Tutsi. And they're indistinguishable, and they're the same people, same color skin, same tribe, same, you know, sometimes same family, and pretty much same community. But yet this happened because of radio influence.
So you started I totally didn't think you would start there, but I took notes on that section too, because I found it fascinating that the radio basically used humorous sketches and songs to call openly for the destruction of the Tutsis.
And they're laughing with it. That's like...
Well, I think the larger point, though, is something we've talked about on the podcast, I think, in the past, is like, you really have to be careful to what you expose yourself to, because what you're exposed to can influence your thoughts, and then your thoughts influences your behavior and your outlook on life. And he even talks about this, which I think resonated both with us, because we're huge podcast fans. Mm-hmm. And Jocko talks about a few minutes after that, he's like, listen, you realize this today with podcasts, there's a certain power to it. A power to their voice going into your head. In the book, it says radio is far and away the most dangerous of the media. It wields a unique and terrifying power once a state or institution collapses. It casts off everything that might sidetrack the force of words. Yeah, the radio can influence, but you can't contain it to one specific domain. It's everything that humans see influences them, and therefore you have to be very careful, like the friends you hang out with, the media that you expose yourself to. I was just reading right before the podcast, because I knew it talks about, you know, and I hope I'm not pronouncing it incorrectly, but the Hutu, they kill 800,000 Tutsis in 100 days. So imagine, like, and you're having to coordinate before you have mobile internet, before you could actually, you know, you have to go and actually physically talk to people. I guess the radio does, radio and TV played that role somewhat back then. But even now, it's like on steroids. So it just goes back to my whole thing where, like, yeah. I love technology, but I don't think we're evolved to know everything that's going on all over the world instantly.
No.
So what I would say is what I would tell people is, if I could only tell somebody one thing that I learned from the podcast, it comes right at the very beginning when he jumps into the book, and it talks about, I'm just going to read the quote, and it says, during that killing season. So let me back up. The book, the author of this book goes and interviews the murderers while they're in prison. So a lot of the people got arrested after the fact, after the genocide. And so these are their own words. They're just telling him, this reporter, journalist, or whatever you want to call him. And so this is some of the killer's words. He said, during that killing season, we rose earlier than usual. We'd go on the attack. Rule number one was to kill. There was no rule number two. It was an organization without complications. And so what happens when you have a singular focus? well, in this case, that your singular focus is unbelievably evil. Well, you can kill 800,000 people in 100 days. The weird thing is, when I first heard that, not only was I shocked, but then I immediately thought of businesses, and because that's usually what I spend my time thinking about, and the organization of companies and how like large companies kind of get away. Like, usually a company starts with a very simple. You have one directive, and it's whatever your product or service is. So like for Uber, find people rides, you know, you have that one simple objective, and then there is really no rule number two, just get more drivers, more people to ride, right? And then you go on and on. Facebook, connect your friends, whatever it was at the very beginning. And you see, as these organizations grow, they become more complicated, and they usually have multiple objectives. What's Google's? Organize the world's information. Now that, you know, they have robots and drones and all kinds of other stuff. But what I thought about it is that, like, that's really effective for anything. And unfortunately, these are unbelievably effective methods of productivity that was applied to killing 800,000 men, women, and children.
Yeah, and you would think the spark was the president getting shot down, right? The following day, the genocide basically began.
Yeah, that's part I didn't understand.
I didn't understand that either.
Did you ever watch that movie Hotel Rwanda?
No, I wanted to, but I couldn't sell it to the wife to watch.
I watched it a few years ago, so my
Don Cheadle, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it might be a little hazy, but that's what I didn't understand. Like, everybody started pulling out, and then once everybody started pulling out, the killing was just continued unabated. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand why did everybody know to leave? Did you hear that in the podcast?
A little bit, like all the white people kind of left, the sentiment was on the podcast, and then I guess that one farmer said like how the white person couldn't believe it because it's something they can't believe or don't want to believe, like kind of something like that. So they just left.
But how did they know to leave though? That's what I don't get. Like,
how do birds know to leave before an earthquake? Like, it's just one of those things. Like, we weren't there, and it was probably soft whispers. They still listen to radio. You could kind of feel it building. And then, I don't know, man, you can kind of just feel tensions, I guess. I've never been in that kind of scenario. And that's more the perspective of the victim, and not, you know, we're getting a different perspective with the actual perpetrator here, right? So I think we're missing half the story because, well, obviously that's the problem with genocide, is you only get the half of the story.
I'm fascinated by military history, but now we're in week 16 of this. Is there like, is this affecting your view on humanity at all?
A little, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
how are you reconciling? Because it's really hard for me to understand. Like, okay, we've covered basically, you know, armed military conflicts, usually between two different groups of people, which, although no one's going to agree with it, it's kind of understandable. Humans are tribalistic by nature, and, you know, they use their differences as a wedge, and then, you know, they can turn, the lowest common denominator of human conflict is violence, right? But in this case, Jocko was talking about, I'm looking for the notes right now, they shared the same race, language, customs as those who eagerly slaughtered them. They lived amongst each other for centuries, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I don't know, like, I want to learn more about, like, and to me, like, learning, studying human military history, you learn more about reality, right? Because, like, to me, there's like this thin veneer of society which is quickly stripped away, and so at its bare, like, what are human beings? But I also don't want to take that to its logical conclusion, all, and it might be an extreme conclusion that, like, humans are monsters. How could you kill by hand 800,000 people in 100 days? And they said, Jocko was talking about, this isn't a big city. These are not people living across the world. You're in a village. You know these people.
Yeah.
You know them.
This is the problem with the ideology. When you truly believe you're superior to another, and I guess tribe is... that's literally what they are. But like, this is your community. It's your community. Like, these people knew each other.
You just used a word though. The good ideology. So I looked up. He mentioned, Jocko mentioned the Hutu had a Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what the hell could that be? And the Ten Commandments to me was a vector to spread the ideology of the Hutu. So I'm not going to read all of them. There's a Wikipedia page I'll leave in the show notes, or you can just Google the Hutu Ten Commandments. But number eight is the Hutu should stop having mercy on the Tutsi. And so like, I like that you use the word ideology, because in most cases, if you believe in ideology, that takes place of your own critical thinking, right? You're saying, hey, I'm not going to use first principle thinking. I'm not going to look at this objectively. I'm going to accept the dogma that you're putting into my brain, and I'm going to accept that as truth. And so to me, that's the dangerous thing for me. Like, I want to know what I believe that is 100% false, and that I'm doing something that is, whether it's doing something that's harmful to other people, myself, or harmful to where I want to go in life, where somebody read this document and said, yeah, number 8, Hutu should stop having mercy on Tutsi. Okay, so that means, and they even talked about this, that if you were a Hutu man and you had married a Tutsi wife and you had Tutsi kid, and therefore your kids were part Tutsi, you killed your wife and children.
Yeah, it's so nuts.
That dogma is scary as hell to me, man. Like, I don't know if that's, whether it's religious dogma, political dogma, nationalistic dogma. Like, it's terrifying some percentage of humans, and maybe all of us, will just readily accept dogma without thinking things through.
No, especially, well, think about it. You're on the side of superiority. Why would you concede like that to better thought? But you should have, because this was a community issue. Like, you're killing people that your neighbors, like literally your neighbors. This was not a feud. It might have been. I'm not sure, but depending on perception of how the president died. But still, this is not like a traditional feud. This is ideology that was like ground up. It was bottom up. It brewed for a couple of years, and then they all just snapped. And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah, because like then, 20 years earlier, there was it was like reversed. I think there was like, I don't know that, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. It's been a few days since I looked at it, but I think it was like the Tutsi killed, they were the minority, but they killed like 20,000 Hutus. And then like this went back, and then a lot of people were saying that there was third parties, like colonizers came in and would, like froth up disagreement, like artificial disagreement between these two to get them to fight for whatever means. I don't know. But I just, how can, my larger question is like, how do you get humans to like stop, pause, and think about what they're doing without just accepting what other people tell them as the truth?
That is really tough.
There's no verification process here.
It's tough to think about like how that like actually happens, because I can't fathom this. I really can't. Like, it's hard to get my mind around it.
Is there any kind of parallel to you? Like, so when I think of it, okay, we talk about like we're heavily influenced in the culture that we grew up in. So for us, that's the American culture. Is there any parallel here between like the Civil War and what took place?
Possibly, but that, I mean, that, no, I got to disagree, because that was, Civil War is basically a states' right feud. Okay. And then people just drew the line and wherever you stood on slavery, but really it was over states' rights for the Civil War. It's like, do we have the right as a state to act independently, or do it like, you know what I mean? Like, wait a minute, we're kind of different, so we're going to fight you on this. We don't want to be a part of the Union. So it's not a great parallel. I think this is more of, you got to look for somewhere like, honestly, man, you got to look for like gang warfare or something like that. Like, you got like Bloods and Crips, like why do they feud when they're really like the same people from the same neighborhood? You know what I mean? Like that, it's literally like that. Like, these people are a part of the community. Rather than like, this is two opposing ideologies when you go back to like the Civil War, but I think this is more of a communal uprising. But yet again, it's 800,000 people. That's nationwide. That's not community. That's I don't know, man. That's really broad.
It's really dense, because he said that it was 800,000 people in a tiny country smaller than the state of Maryland. So there's something I want to talk to you about again, trying to understand human nature, like what is actually true, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they talked about, we had to calm them down. They could turn ugly for those around them. Men can get used to killing. He can become a beast without noticing it. Some threaten each other when they had no more Tutsi under their machete, meaning now they're starting, they're not going to stop killing different people. Now they're going to kill their friends and brothers. In their faces, you could see the need to kill. And then the note I left myself was, this reminded me of what we talked about a week and a half ago with the Henry V speech about losing control over his soldiers. Do you remember that part where he was like, listen, I have my guys under control now. So you might as well, you know, you might as well give up now, because very soon they're, you know, what are they saying here? Like, I cannot calm them down. They'll turn ugly. They're just going to get used to killing, and they're going to become beasts without noticing it. And then, you know, everybody dies. And so it was, I don't know, man, like, how much of that is in everyday humans?
Probably every bit of it.
Is it just that we're not put in the circumstances to do so? Like, how different are we than the I keep calling them Hulu. I keep saying Hulu because of the freaking streaming service. No, the Hutu are the Tutsis, are the guys from Henry IV, are the Chechens, or any of these other conflicts that we talked about. Like, the scary answer to that question is not different at all. Mm-hmm. That we just were in a different level, that we're just in different circumstances, and therefore this side of our humanity has never shown itself and hopefully never will.
Yeah.
And to me, that's kind of a sad realization, though.
I don't think every human's capable of it. I truly don't. And that's what's like crazy about this. I'm sure, I mean, it's one of those Mongolian situations, like if you either kill or be killed. Like that's what kind of a frenzy this was. And these, I mean, to add what you said, to draw back from the podcast, is like once they didn't have any more Tutsi to kill, they started killing cows. Like violence is you know, it sounds
addictive,
almost addictive? Yeah, like addictive, as if it was like it is like the same way addiction is a disease. Mm-hmm. Like you need to be somewhat cured of it, and no one, I don't know, man. Like this is definitely rough territory, but like you can't pause and stop. Like these people are really just trapped in that sort of diseased mind of whatever was going on. And I say whatever because I don't understand 100% like the genocide mentality. The book, when it talks about the youth, that they were just more ruthless because of their vitality and their, I guess the other ingredients baked into the youth, that like you have forever to live on how, you know what I mean? Like that type of thing.
You don't know,
like,
what you don't know when you're younger.
Yeah. They're so reckless and pretty much the younger, the more ruthless in the genocide.
Well, they told a story where this guy's coming out on his porch and he's just chastising these young soldiers, like, don't do this. What are you doing? Put your machetes down and go home. And in the group of soldiers go up to him. They cut him down to death. In that group, even though he's not the one that killed him, was his son. And his son did nothing. Yeah. He just watched this other group of kids cut his dad to pieces, and then he left with the kids. He left with the people, the murderers.
Groupthink is a motherfucker.
So I wonder if, like, I wonder if there was drugs, like some kind of altering of their consciousness. Because I remember watching this Vice special like years ago about this guy named like General Butt Naked or something. And they would smoke like PCP, or they call him General Butt Naked because the soldiers would fight naked because they thought they could, if they were naked,
they couldn't be seen.
Couldn't be seen or couldn't be shot or something like that. But but they were, how they got the kids to kill and to basically lack all humanity was maybe PCP. I can't remember the exact drug, but they gave them drugs where they just basically were drugged out zombies. Because to me, like, how are you going to see your father hacked to death and do nothing about it?
Like the movie Lord of War, when they're, I guess they snorted what they called brown. How crazy was that? I want to know if that was real. It was like half cocaine.
What is that, heroin?
No, it was half cocaine, half gunpowder.
Oh my
God. I think,
God.
Right? It was cocaine. I don't know. I can't remember, but it was half gunpowder.
So yeah, you know what it is, man? Like we're doing this podcast and trying to like learn, but I feel like I got to the end of this podcast and I just have more questions than I have answers.
I feel the same way. As like, how can a whole population be desensitized that much where you're killing your neighbors? Like through comedy, is sketch comedy really that powerful? Like here, like there's so much missing, I think, in this for us to truly understand.
And not only that, how do you do it so fast?
Machetes. I mean, it only takes a few minutes.
That's 330 on a. If you're running 24-hour shifts, that's 333 people an hour.
Yeah,
by hand, and I don't think they're running shifts like that. But you kind of understand with modern technology, weaponry. Of course, you can do that, but they're doing it with machetes.
You just went. They just went to village, and they already like, and everyone was pretty much defenseless, I imagine.
Jeez,
you know what I mean? It's like, it's not that hard to kill a human being if you're properly motivated and armed with a machete. Like, you can go into a, like, they just brought them all to the marsh and did the worst, man. Like, I don't know. It's really hard for us to figure out. This is one of those things that, like, you're 100% right. We're just going to have questions, and I think I'm just going to move on. Like, I want to learn something from it, but it's what you really learn from this is just kind of like, stop and think of what you're doing. Always give yourself that like second or two to be like, is this what I'm doing? Am I right? Am I going to be on the right side of history? Will I regret this as an 80-year-old man? Like, all that stuff is extremely valuable. And I'm sure a lot of these guys like look back and they're just like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like,
well, I don't know, because so first of all, one, I think that's great advice to close on 100%. I do want to just say about like some people, I don't know. I mean, how much of a difference does it really make if they're remorseful or not? Hopefully you would be remorseful. Hopefully you'd never do it, obviously, to begin with. But I sent you a text earlier because I was rewatching the podcast on YouTube.
Yeah.
And Jocko got to the part where he's reading a quote from the book, and the guy's like, the killer's like, I want to make it clear. From the first person I killed to the last one, I was not sorry about a single one. That is bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just pure evil. So anyways, I think you just summed it up right there. We're left with more questions than answers. The book is called Machete Season. If you want to listen to it, we'll leave a link in the show notes where you can get 2 free audiobooks. And if you want to listen to a podcast that's about more positive and less violence, I do a podcast very similar to Jocko Podcast. It's called Founders Podcast. Instead of reading books on military history, I read books on entrepreneurial history, mainly biographies of people that built companies in the past. You can get it anywhere you listen to your podcast. Just put in Founders Podcast, or you can go to founderspodcast.com. Rob, next week we go to, I think we're back to World War II, Band of Brothers.
Sweet.
And then the week after that, we go, we're going to be talking again about the Russian and Chechen War, and this time from the Russians' perspective. And I actually just listened to the audiobook. Yeah, I was traveling and took a really long plane ride, so that audiobook was about 11 hours long, and it's called Soldier's War. Hold on, let me look at my library real
quick. Did you get through all of it?
Yeah, I got through all of it. One Soldier's War by Arkady Babchenko, and he was an 18-year-old Russian conscripted into the first Chechen War in 94, and then he volunteered again, I think, in 98 or 2000. 2000, maybe. So, yeah, fantastic writer. He's actually a journalist today and a writer today. But, so that'll be 2 weeks from now. I'll have some more input on that one because I've, listened to the entire 11-hour and 49-minute audiobook. But it was fantastic. Gruesome, because I already sent you a text that you were like, oh, thanks for good morning. but I'll save that for the podcast. And I don't know. I will talk to you next week.
Avitazay.